Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
The damage on Wall Street is infecting all of our communities, and its effects on our New York State finances are devastating.
Now you know that voice. But a year ago, WNYC political director Andrea Bernstein put out a memo reminding everyone here that the name Patterson, as in David Patterson, is spelled with one T. Many people were spelling it with two T's at the time, like the former heavyweight champion and New York State Athletic Commission chairman, Floyd Patterson. The point being, until Elliot Spitzer suddenly resigned as governor, David Patterson just wasn't all that well known. Suddenly, a year ago today, he became governor of New York.
I have confronted the prejudice of race and challenged the issues of my own disability. I have served in government for over two decades. I stand willing and able to lead this state to a brighter future and a better tomorrow. Let me reintroduce myself. I am David Patterson, and I am the governor of New York State.
Yeah, but what timing? Does David Patterson wonder whether what might have been if he became governor at the beginning of a boom rather than a historic bust? But with the governor's approval rating now only slightly better than Dick Cheney's, let's ask, how's David Patterson doing after 1 year in office and hoping to be elected to his own four-year term next year? For this, a WNYC Reporters Roundtable. With us, WNYC political reporter Elaine Rivera, WNYC Transportation and Development reporter Matthew Sherman, and WNYC Poverty Issues reporter Cindy Rodriguez. Hey, guys.
Hi,
hey,
Brian.
Hey, Brian.
Thanks for doing this. Elaine, let's remember back a year ago when he got off to a fairly inspiring start with that speech, but then I think a mixed start after he revealed some of his own personal foibles following the Spitzer prostitution scandal.
That's right. There was tremendous expectations for him, and I think those expectations were passed on from, you know, people were so disappointed with Elliot Spitzer, but here you had this historic moment, the first African-American governor who overcame this disability of being blind to rise up to the highest office in the state. So people had tremendous expectations for him, and it was good for a while. It was good for, you know, several months, and, you know, he's witty and charming and funny, and I think his high point came when he started ringing the alarm bells saying that the economy was in trouble, but it kind of fell apart after that.
And right at the beginning, he was asked if he ever used a prostitute.
Only the lobbyists. That's why we want campaign finance, Jacob.
Only the lobbyists. Now, that was from his first day news conference, right?
I think so, yes.
And that was considered a real breath of fresh air. I don't think we've had the lobbying reform, the so-called good government reform, that a lot of people have been hoping for.
No, but I think his all his time has been taken up with this economic crisis. Also, he's been very disappointing to progressives because his if you look at his record when he was the minority leader of the state Senate, he was very, very progressive on things like drug reform and environmentalism. And now he's looking, I think, to 2010, and he wants to get reelected. So he's playing things down the middle.
Right. And listeners, we want to hear from you. How's David Patterson doing after 1 year in office? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Give us a call. Is he the progressive governor that you might have hoped for if you knew David Patterson from before? Is he doing a good job on the economy, on transportation and development and poverty issues and other things? How's David Patterson doing? We want your reviews on this, his first anniversary in office. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or post it to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. And Matthew, I know you actually have to go in a few minutes because there's this event taking place around a possible compromise to save the MTA fare for now. But you've been covering development and transportation mostly. Later, we'll do a separate segment later in the hour about what may be this new MTA compromise. But what's Patterson's role been in looking for a fix?
Brian, this is, in a way, the first real test of his leadership, his ability to get the legislature to do what he wants outside of the budget amendments he's made so far. He is in charge of the MTA. The MTA is actually a state authority. And so what he did was, very early on, right after congestion pricing went down in flames last April, was begin to appoint a commission to look at the MTA's long-term needs so it didn't have to keep borrowing. And he appointed as the chairman of that commission Richard Ravitch, the former MTA chairman. Turns out to be a brilliant pick on his part because Ravitch is just such a great spokesman for the MTA. He has a lot of moral authority. Legislators, everyone that I speak to pretty much on both sides of this issue really respect him and can't say anything bad about him. And so Ravitch came up with this plan that, among other things, calls for tolls on the East River bridges and a payroll tax. And in the interim, this plan has morphed from a plan to fund long-term projects like the Second Avenue subway to plug the short-term deficit the MTA is facing. As you mentioned, this is unrolling today. The state Senate Democrats don't want the tolls, and they're unveiling it right as we speak, their alternative proposal, and then Patterson at noon, and will give his response. It will be interesting to see how strong is he, how does he at once be diplomatic and also show leadership.
Well, this MTA bailout, and we know that the head of the MTA, Lee Sander, went public a few months ago and actually used the word draconian for the fare hikes and service cuts which could be imposed at their March 25th meeting if nothing is done to save their financial bacon in the short run. And you're right, the Ravitch Commission was supposed to look at the long-term future of the MTA, and now it's gotten bogged down on the short-term stuff. It's a political football because people on the other side of the East River or Harlem River from Manhattan don't like the tolls. People who run businesses don't like the payroll tax idea. They kind of need to do one of these things, I think, in order to keep the fares and service cuts from becoming draconian in the short term. So it's a political football and keeps being passed around. They were trying to negotiate this behind the scenes with a lot of goodwill. Matthew, do you think these consecutive news conferences this hour and the next hour mean that this is broken down and now they're negotiating in public?
Pretty much. That's what's happening for sure. And the one criticism I do hear from transportation advocates is that Patterson, even though he did a good job appointing Ravitch to lead this commission and such, he hasn't really been out there pushing this plan himself. In fact, he's let Ravitch do most of the lobbying with legislators. And Patterson's sort of taken a back seat. And maybe if he brought a little bit more of his authority to bear, it would have gone a little bit further than it has so far.
And how about in development? The World Trade Center redevelopment, the new Moynihan Station at Penn Station, they may not be people's first priorities right now, but these were big, big items for the state just a few years ago that were really supposed to set up our future. And they seem to be stalled, or are they just not in the public eye?
They are on the back burner in a way because of the economy is so poor right now. But just as you're opening about the prostitutes at the opening press conference and such brought this breath of fresh air, Patterson really came out in the development front seeming to bring sort of a new frankness, new candidness. We're going to look at the World Trade Center schedule and say whether or not this is a realistic timetable. And we're going to look at another development project, Moynihan Station, which is converting the Farley Post Office on the west side into a new train station. We're going to look at that, and we're going to either do it or not do it. And so far, what we've seen is he's run up against the same problems every other governor has when it comes to these mega projects, which is it's very hard not to promise a lot in the short term and then later on find you just can't get these things done according to schedule.
All right. WNYC's Matthew Sherman, part of our Reporters Roundtable, looking at how Governor Patterson has been doing in his first year in office. But I see you looking at your watch, so go. I really want you to get to this news conference on time, as long as you promise to report back to us later in the day.
Certainly will. Thanks so much.
Bye-bye. WNYC's Matthew Sherman still with us, WNYC political reporter Elaine Rivera, WNYC poverty issues reporter Cindy Rodriguez, as we talk about Governor Patterson at 1 year in office. And how do you think he's doing? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9696. 1-800-848-9292. Ralph in Astoria, you're on WNYC. Hi, Ralph.
Hey, hello. This is more a question for your panel. I wonder, would he have had more goodwill in these difficult times if it wouldn't have been for the Caroline Kennedy mess, you know, that they dropped the ball pretty badly on that?
So, Elaine Rivera, political reporter, I'm going to go to you on that because, sadly, I think most people might be judging David Paterson on the Caroline Kennedy business more than anything else. And that's not to say he's done a good job or a bad job at the policy level, but there was so much mystery about how that ended, what really happened there as far as you know, and do you see this as being huge in the public perception of him?
Well, what they say, what appearance is 90% of the job. I do think it hurt him badly, and as Matthew was saying, he was refreshing when he came into office because there was this candor, there was this honesty. You know, he didn't want to fool people, but the way he handled the Caroline Kennedy issue was that he was coy, he was vacillating, he was wishy-washy, and it went against the initial impressions people had of him. And I do think it's connected to his top advisor, Charles O'Byrne, leaving in a tax scandal. And once Charles O'Byrne left, things seemed to crumble and fall apart, and I don't think he really was able to surround himself with people who gave him good, sound advice on how to handle this. So, yeah, it hurt him badly and wounded him.
Cindy, David Paterson came out of a poor community. He was state senator from Harlem.
That's right. He was
very identified over the years with these issues himself. Has he fostered this agenda as governor?
Well, Brian, I think there's mixed reviews. I think he gets a lot of credit often from advocates on what he's done with food stamps, for instance. He's made them much more accessible. He's tweaked the laws or taken advantage of different rules that will allow certain families to receive more food stamps. I think during the summer he actually applied for some energy assistance for a certain group of people who don't usually pay for energy bills, or people in public housing, people who use Section 8, so that they could get more food stamps each month. And I think the increase was on average about $131 for about 90,000 people here in New York City. He's also eliminated a rule that would check people's assets. So this would typically benefit, for instance, a low-income senior who maybe owns a house but still is not bringing in a lot of money. In the past, having that house or having a few thousand dollars in a savings account would have meant he or she wouldn't have been able to collect food stamps, so he got rid of that asset check. And so people do give him a lot of credit for that. Now, they also say he should stand up to Mayor Bloomberg, who in one example, insists that people still be fingerprinted for food stamps. Statewide, in other parts of the state, that's not required. And there's also this exemption that would allow for people who are unemployed, who are not taking part in a welfare-to-work program, to receive food stamps beyond 3 months. Mayor Bloomberg has stood pretty firm that he doesn't want that exemption here in New York City.
That's an interesting story, and that's one that hasn't been in the headlines very much. So that's an unresolved difference of opinion between the mayor and the governor over policy toward those populations.
Yeah, that's correct. Well, I think that the Office of Temporary Disability Assistance, that's the office that sort of oversees these programs, they would say that the reason that they didn't come out against Bloomberg was because New York City has been good in increasing the access to food stamps.
And another thing that the governor did in his austerity budget for these very tough times that he announced a few months ago, while he cut almost everything, he announced an increase in the welfare cash assistance grant, which hadn't gone up in New York State in many, many years, the basic monthly welfare check.
Right, those 18 years that it hasn't gone up. And yes, that's correct. He did raise that after a very long time. Now, there was a lawsuit that preceded that.
So was he forced to under a court order?
I don't
order?
Know that he was really forced to. No, he definitely was not forced to under a court order. The lawsuit came out, I believe, in early December, and about a week or two later, he announced that he was, in fact, going to raise this. So it went from about, I believe it was about 300. It will go. This is not occurring until January of 2010. That's when it will kick in. So it won't have an effect on this budget, this coming budget.
And just
cycle.
So people know the numbers, if you know the numbers, what is the basic welfare cash grant now, and what would it go to under the governor's proposal?
Well, I could give you an example for a family of three. I believe it would go from about $300 to $400 a month.
And the legislature needs to approve this, so this itself could become a point of political contention?
I don't believe that it needs the legislature to approve it.
He can just order
that. I'm not positive
that.
About that,
okay.
Actually.
Jenna on Staten Island, you're on WNYC on the one-year anniversary of Governor Patterson taking office. Hi, Jenna.
Hi, Ryan. I love your show.
Thank you
for all your information.
Thanks so much.
I just wanted to say that I love Patterson for his candor, which one of your guests mentioned. But he's totally refreshing, and he's one of the few politicians who are completely realistic about their approach to solving economic problems. And even though we may not agree with his decisions, at least he's approaching it head-on in a very direct, hardcore kind of approach.
Is he doing that, Elaine? Does he deserve that much credit?
Yeah, he does, and that he has said himself the high point of this past year has been him warning people, and he called. It was very rare. He called a special legislative session last August, and
it's worth noting that it was last August,
right.
Which was
before that's right.
What we consider the beginning of the financial crisis, September 15th.
Right. So, but he saw it. He was telling everybody, and everyone was just kind of. Poo-pooing him and saying, well, you know, it's not so bad and we could continue to spend. So he does deserve credit for that.
And here is Governor Patterson talking about taxes in this austerity budget.
We will not have a personal income tax increase. We think that this has contributed to the reduction of our tax base as more and more New Yorkers move out of state for other areas where the quality of life and costs are perceived by them to be better. So at this time, we cannot consider that.
So, Cindy Rodriguez, there is, at least in the political sector, a kind of class debate going on over this particular issue. Should the so-called millionaires tax be instituted, which would really be on people earning $250,000 or more, as Sheldon Silver, the Assembly Speaker, wants, and as Governor Patterson has been resisting. A lot of the Democrats in the Assembly, people from the Working Families Party, others say we can't be fair to the poor and the working class people in New York if we're not going to adequately tax the rich in this crisis. We're going to wind up balancing the budget more on the backs of poor and working class people. Is this an active debate that you see out in the anti-poverty advocacy communities?
Yes, definitely. I think this is one of the issues that many of the advocates for the poor really criticized the governor for. I mean, I think they feel that back when he was minority leader of the state Senate, he was for progressive taxing, and so they often push him to implement this so-called millionaire's tax.
Matthew in Astoria, you're on WNYC.
Hi. I, first of all, agree very much with Jenna on Staten Island. Not only has Governor Patterson handled the economic crisis with candor, he's done it with a lot of good humor. You remember back when he was being grilled by the state Senate on budget cuts, and I think it was Dean Skelos said, okay, you need $2 billion in cuts. Fine, we'll give up all of our $200 million in member items. How does that sound? And Governor Patterson just said, sounds like $1.8 billion to go. I thought that was brilliant.
And did you also call to say you thought he got a bad rap on the Caroline Kennedy situation?
I think he got a terrible rap on the Caroline Kennedy situation. I think that he was pushed into an impossible position by junky political journalists. The election was over. And they were jonesing for something else, so they kept going, who's it going to be? Who's going to succeed Hillary? Who's going to succeed? Who's going to succeed Hillary? And you know what reporters do. They'll ask him, well, who's it going to be? And they'll say, I can't decide yet. Well, could it be Anthony Weiner? Oh, he'd be great. Could it be this person? Oh, he'd be great. The man was trying to be polite.
Mm. All right, Matthew. Elaine Rivera, do you blame your colleagues in the press to that degree, or did Patterson really kind of blow it here, either leaking below-the-belt information himself, which some people said it actually came from him, or losing control of some of his aides who were trying to defend him, but in this less-than-graceful way?
Well, I think it's a little of both. I don't think he handled it well. And yes, you know, reporters kept pressing him, but, you know, this is what reporters do. He probably should not have talked about it as much. He should have just said, from the beginning, he said, I am going to wait till Hillary Clinton is sworn in, and then I'll make my selection. And he shouldn't have talked about it again. But he kept giving these conflicting statements that, again, made him appear, look, wishy-washy, and he didn't know how to delegate.
As we talk about David Paterson's first year in office, it's the one-year anniversary today. One more clip, and this is from a parody of David Paterson from Saturday Night Live that became very controversial in its own right.
And it's bad out there, Seth. I mean, if you don't believe me, take a look at this graph that I got here. Now, as you can see, it shows that unemployment in 2008...
Governor, it's upside down.
You bet it is. The whole world is upside down, and someone's got to fix it.
All right, so that became controversial, Elaine, because they were making fun of his blindness as if he ever came out with a chart that he couldn't figure out which was the right side up on, or walked into chairs and stuff, which that skit also had him doing. And he never really has done any of those things. And so that became, controversial, rightly so, in its own right. But I know it's sensitive to ask the question, but is his disability a factor in his job performance? If Paterson talks about how he spent 60 hours memorizing one major speech, how does it affect the rest of his job?
Well, yeah, I think anyone with a disability will say it's a factor in how they go about doing what they're doing. But think about this. This is a man who never even learned how to read Braille. He put himself through law school. He's been in elected office for 20 years now. People underestimate him, and I do think, yes, it probably takes up more time and it makes him more vulnerable, and because he needs to count on more people. And he did tell me when I interviewed him when he was lieutenant governor, he talked about how he had to count on so many people, but he thought that's what made him a good elected official, because he had to learn how to find common ground with many, many people. Hmm. But also at the same time, we have to ask ourselves, he shattered a glass ceiling. And, the paradigm of how we see people who are disabled, this man is the governor of New York. And, we have to start thinking about things. New Yorkers have to start thinking about, not underestimating people with disabilities.
WNYC's Elaine Rivera, WNYC's Cindy Rodriguez, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you.
Governor David Paterson, 1 year in office today. Still to come, the decline of the Irish pub, and we are following those dueling news conferences about how to save the MTA without a draconian fare hike and service cuts, and we will update you on these two proposals coming out right now. Stay with us.